Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome. Hello and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. And today I'm talking with Catherine Woodward Thomas, who is my trainer and mentor. She is Catherine Woodward Thomas, MA, MFT, is the author of New York Times bestseller, Conscious Uncoupling, 5 Steps to Living Happily Even After, which was nominated for a Books for Better Life Award. And then the national bestseller 2, Calling in the One, 7 Weeks to Attract the Love of Your Life. She's also a licensed marriage family therapist and teacher to thousands from all corners of the world in her virtual and in-person learning communities. Welcome so much, Catherine. It's just so lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much for inviting me into your tribe here. It's delightful to be with you.
Well, it's always good to be in your company. I'm always inspired and informed and growing in your company. It's lovely.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to ask you really, what is it like having coronavirus in New York State where you are?
Yeah, we're all on the hot seat right now. Well, you know, it's sobering. Actually, I think it's sobering for all of us to be going through this. I've been very, very blessed with the situation where my sweetheart and I were in New York City meeting my 2 daughters. One is in college in Pennsylvania and the other's in college in Massachusetts. And we met in Manhattan to have a fun week together during spring break. And when this all broke, and I was fortunate enough to have, my mom has a house out on the tip of Long Island, a 4-bedroom big house that was sitting there empty. So we just hopped a bus and came out here for refuge, which at the time there was no virus out here, but now the virus is now ravaging Long Island as well. And so that hot spot has spread out, but we're safe and we're in good company. And so we're taking good care of our health. I think so many people right now have these big aspirations. We put pressure on ourselves. Well, I should finally write that novel. Mm-hmm. We should finally learn how to, you know, do that cooking project, or I should clean out all of my closets. And I think that's going to be great for those of us who have the energy to do it. But I have to stress that I think this time is about self-care, yeah, primarily. So eating well, exercising, doing your spiritual practice, sleeping well, we're really back to basics.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, I happen to be in a situation where the 4 of us are kind of enjoying being together. But I know a lot of people are not having that experience. I know that domestic violence is rising during this time, and some people feel trapped with their abusers. Some people who were feeling lonely before this began, I mean, I'm in the United States, you're in the UK, and both countries have been known to have loneliness as one of the primary health problems of our time. And I think in the UK, you guys, you know, even set up a governmental agency to address this issue. So now people are in forced quarantine and social distancing, which I think is a misnamer because I think it's really physical distancing. But what the opportunity is to gather together in these virtual ways and be much more connected, much more vulnerable and transparent, much more real, much more generous with our love and with our time and with our resources. So what is happening, the silver lining of what's happening, is that for many, they're actually having the experience of being really cared for or really just living a little bit closer to humanity. The other thing from a relational perspective that's kind of miraculous is that for the first time in the history of humankind, pretty much the entire world is inside of one conversation.
Absolutely. Mm. We really are the global village.
We are the global village. I mean, this is a terrible time. And for the individuals who are suffering, for the individuals who love those who are suffering with illness, for those who are experiencing economic crisis, for those who are trapped in bad situations. This doesn't justify the suffering that's going on. I don't think any of us deserve the high levels of suffering that are happening right now and the sacrifices that are needing to be made. What seems to be happening, Heather, is a collective karma that has little to do with whether or not a particular individual or an individual family deserves that or brought that on themselves. None of that is true. You know, a lot of the times that with those of us who are metaphysicians, and I certainly include us, you and I, in that, where we're looking at how we're creating our own experience from a place of profound self-responsibility, really in order to access the power to have it be different. But when we're talking about self as source, we're not talking about this moment. There is no self as source. I mean, unless, you know, there is karma too. If you're a lifelong smoker, if you haven't taken care of your health, now you're going to be more vulnerable. You're going to be in the more vulnerable group. So there's that kind of, you know, vulnerability that would emerge from the choices that you've made and the actions that you've taken. But even there, you know, it seems to be quite random how this illness is impacting us collectively. There are three things that I have suggested. I know we're here to talk about relationship, but I want to make sure everybody's well and taken care of. So three things that I'm really, you know, stressing so much with everyone I have the opportunity to speak to is, one really is to open your heart at a deeper level to care for those who need caring. Just think of the people that you know that could use a phone call, that could use some support. I gave a bit of money to my girls to manage. They're both in college. And I said, okay, well, we have some money to give to people in need. So you decide how that's going to be given away. So they're working on that project. So just keeping our hearts soft and open and pitching in with each other. The second thing is this learning to love ourselves. I think when we, particularly in a crisis, when we see suffering, those of us in particular who are empaths, which I think a lot of us are, we're really feeling the suffering of our world very deeply. It's to really prioritize resting and keeping things very simple and not stressing out so that your immune system stays strong. You know, we've got to put the oxygen mask on ourselves. So I tell people, lower your expectations of yourself right now, if you can. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean let yourself go. Different than let yourself go. Letting yourself go, not a good plan right now. Because again, keeping our immune system up is keeping positive. So do your spiritual practice. Forgive people. Forgive yourself. Take responsibility. Clean things up with people. I had a chance to be on a call with Susan Stifelman and Christina McGee, I think her name is. They're both wonderful parenting experts. And we were talking about, how do you co-parent during this time? Mm-hmm. My contribution to that wonderful conversation, and that they had a lot to say about it, was this is a time to consciously uncouple. If you have unfinished business, it's going to show up as tension and disagreement and power struggles and misalignment, which is really causing very big problems, co-parents.
Yeah.
So you go back and you clean that up. You know, I think this is a time for us to offload all the things we can no longer be to carry around, and resentments, mm-hmm. and being right about something, you know, getting restitution, getting you to agree with my perspective. All those things are things we don't really need to be carting around. And then the third thing is to really recognize that there's no fixed future. One of the core principles that we're working with all the time is that we have a say in how our love lives go, because we recognize the future isn't yet created. There's momentum from the collective choices that we've made and how we've been showing up for years. But at any time, the future is up for grabs and recreation. So now on a collective level, to say, how might I use this time to imagine a better world? Mm-hmm. To look at the silver linings that are emerging between us and say, you know, that feels good. Let's keep that.
Yeah.
Let's keep putting people before profits, which is essentially what, you know, the world has been living like profits are more important than people. And finally, the governments of the world are having to say, actually, no, not really. Let the economy tank. People matter. People matter.
We are nothing without our people.
We are nothing without our people. And money is important, but it's not the most important. So these are things that are happening that we can, you know, stick our foot in the little open door of that possibility of living in a world where relationship is first and caring for each other matters. So these are the things that we're all navigating. So on a personal level, I feel very blessed. But I, like you, am an empath. So I'm feeling the groaning of the escalating suffering. And my heart is tender and I feel raw with it. And I'm holding from a very deep center both the need to respond on an individual level or to individuals who are suffering with great compassion. And then also the awareness that on some level, Heather, we've known this was something was going to happen. We've all been living with profound tension because of our lack of integrity with the generations of the future, with creatures on the planet, including other human beings. We've been really off balance for a long time. So we've all been feeling the tension of that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It feels like this sort of grasping quality and the sort of rape of the planet actually has been uppermost for quite a long time. And I really do hope that we get a chance to reevaluate here and choose love over demand.
Beautifully said. And I think, you know, when we go through these things, it's never cut and dry. We never just see, oh, you know, we have all good emotions or we just have a few emotions. We, you know, our emotions are all over the map about everything and particularly this. And so we're horrified and we're heartbroken and we're anxious and we're uncertain. So you have all of that happening. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a part of us that is hopeful, is hopeful that this could really be the start of something new, that life has our attention and that, you know, things are being realigned and we're finding out that the most important thing is not the economy, that that's not the bottom line. The bottom line is the health and well-being of our people. So I think we're feeling hopeful. I think some of us are feeling just relieved that the air is cleared up.
Yes.
That we can breathe.
Bird song.
That we're hearing the birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're hearing the birds. It's like the planet is just taking a breath. So we have all of it, you know, and to recognize ourselves as change agents, as active agents in the transformation that we're wanting to see in our world. So that becomes the practice. You know, how can I bring forth the world that I want to be leaving to future generations today? What small gestures can I take today that demonstrate that I've gone beyond my own comfort zone?
Yeah.
That I've stretched to become a part of the solution now, a part of this newly emergent world.
It's interesting because there are all sorts of acts. I love the piece in Conscious Uncoupling about golden repair, and there are all sorts of generous acts going on. My business partner, Christine, and I, we hire out rooms to other therapists, and we decided we'd take the decision not to charge anybody over the next 2 months because they're all moving into working online. I know other companies are actually asking people to pay regardless in order that the company manages, but we decided to shoulder that financial burden ourselves so that there is something for people to come back to when this is all over.
See, it makes me want to cry that you're doing that. I actually have tears in my eyes now.
Thank you.
I'm so touched by that. So touched by that generosity.
We set that company up to have as a resource for the people of Swindon and Wiltshire. So it's really close to our hearts because the best will in the world, NHS mental health services cannot service the needs, mental health needs of the population any longer. So we have nearly 40 people work with us. And they offer that service, different prices, different ranges. So most people could find a therapist that can work with them.
That makes me want to move to Swindon.
You're very sweet. Yeah. So we don't want to lose that. You know, we've been building that for 7 years and we want to have that perpetuate for a long, long time. So those are the acts of kindness that we are offering.
Yeah, that's beautiful. One of the things that I'm doing is that I just recognize that so many people feel alone with the things that they're going through. So we set up a weekly Sunday morning. Well, I guess it's Sunday evening in the UK. It's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. So late afternoon in the UK, almost dinner time, but a prayer where we just get on and we pray together. But people put in chat what they want prayer for.
Oh,
and I pray aloud for all of us, but we're all there. So we just started that last Sunday.
Oh, brilliant.
We'll keep it going for a couple months.
So that's on Zoom?
It is on Zoom. You know, it's interesting. I don't think we have an icon on the website, but KatherineWoodwardThomas.com. If you sign up for the Love Out Loud Daily, we'll be sending out weekly notices to sign
Brilliant.
Up for that call. Thank you.
That's gorgeous. Can I just sing the praises of Love Out Loud Daily as well?
Yeah.
Wonderful words of wisdom, and they're usually really topical. You amaze me that, you know, you're speaking about something 2 or 3 days before something really emerges in the zeitgeist.
Well, you know, I'm listening and I'm writing it from listening. It's, I want to say off the top of my head, but it's really off the top of my heart or coming from my own deeper knowing about what's needing to be said, what's already in the collective. So I write from a place of listening to what's in the collective conversation. Mm. And usually the Love Out Louds are about messages of how we can all expand our capacity to have really healthy, happy relationships across the board. Lately, it's been about how to be in relationship with what's happening collectively for us, how to relate to it, how to relate to life, how to care for ourselves. So, you know, whatever is really important for us to be leaning into. And a lot of it's just very, these days, very basic.
Yeah. You know,
very simple. Because I think when we get scared, it's good to go back to the basics.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. What I love about the dailies is just they're so inspiring and heartwarming, so supportive and insightful. And I've been actually directing people, particularly people who are on their own, because I work with a lot of Calling in the One clients, and I direct them there all of the time, because it is something that can be held onto. It's very beautiful. People are describing feeling like their individual homes are ships on a big sea, that they can't see what's happening. They see it on their TV screens, but they can't perceive it, you know, with their own eyes and their own ears. They can't see the sickness. Most of us yet aren't touched by it. We will be, I'm sure. But there's a sense of this big sea of stuff happening that can't be influenced. And we're all in our little pods. So actually these things that connect us together are invaluable. And I love your prayer on Sunday mornings. I'll be looking out for that.
Thank you. Well, one of the recent Love Out Loud messages was talking about the sense of not having control and the sense of uncertainty. And for the most part, we get a sense of power by having certainty and control. And so there's no way to push the river on that right now. We're not going to get certainty other than, you know, wash your hands and stay in your home. And so it's leaning into the gift of uncertainty and coming up with some really great questions to live since we don't have the answers. Like, how can I use this time to deepen into the truth of who I am and begin aligning my life with who I really truly came here to be? How can I get into greater levels of integrity with my calling? How can I be closer to others given that we're physically distant right now? We're needing to physically distance right now. How can I be at the greatest service right now? You know, really starting to see things. I know, and I'm busy because I consider myself, you know, very fortunate again because I'm used to working virtually. I have a virtual community. So I've actually gotten busier. But even getting busier and even being here with three other people in the house that I'm staying in, I can hear things more deeply right now. And I can see the changes that I need to be making on a daily basis, which are really becoming a version of myself that's unrecognizable, that's healthier, that's more powerful. So if we're really listening, if we're able to soothe ourselves and care for ourselves enough so that we're not, you know, captivated by panic, and we're able to really sit, and that's why I'm saying do your spiritual practice, do whatever it takes. Don't be binging on sugar and drinking alcohol every night, you know, because you're not at your best self. So stay in your best self, because there are gifts that are seeking to emerge for each and every one of us from the depth of our soul, where, you know, we all kind of know directions we should be growing, but we're busy with our day-to-day lives and the day-to-day demands. So there's a lot that's waking up right now for each and every one of us.
I think the whole stillness around us really engenders that. There is a sense of going inside. It's inescapable. We are hearing our own head chatter. And I imagine for some people that's quite a torment. And the things that I love about both Conscious Uncoupling and Calling in the One, that they allow us to hear that head chatter and find a more compassionate voice inside to challenge it. and find out what's really true.
Powerful thing that you're talking about.
It is.
And just the acknowledgement of part of what's hard for some people, for many people, I think, is that the stillness is confrontive of the kind of loops that are going on in their mind and the feelings that they have in their body about who they are. You know, a lot of us are living with a deep sense of shame of who we are, feelings of failure, feelings that somehow life has separated us and designated us to be on our own without support. And that actually is not just a thought. I know we've dealt with it in the metaphysical spiritual community is, you know, you are what you think and, you know, change your thoughts and change your life. But the thing about the thoughts is that they're really, the consciousness doesn't live in the mind. We tend to think of our thoughts as something in the mind. Mm-hmm. What we're really talking about is a consciousness that's alive in the body and living as an energy field that's really centered around somehow an identity that was born from painful situations we endured when we were younger. And for some of us, that was, you know, way back in the womb or in the crib. So we don't even have specific memories attached. We just have this feeling that somehow we're not good enough or we're inferior or we're not wanted by life, we're on the outside of life. So one of the things that, you know, Heather and I have been doing, everyone in our community, is really discovering how to shift consciousness at the very core of what you've been suffering with, how to go down to the very core of it and shift that center so that we're not always band-aiding the kind of, you know, symptoms of that center. You know, you could talk about even affirmations like, you know, we are all one, for example, because I'm calling that a little bit of a band-aid if, you know, what's being triggered on an emotional level is this deep chronic loneliness at the center of, like, it feels like the center of your soul, like this cavernous emptiness. So if you're, you know, you might be able to soothe a little bit with an idea that we are all one, or you might, you know, even have an experience in a moment where your heart kind of expands. But where we like to go, and all those things are good, we're not dismissing them as not good. But for some of us who've really had a lot of trauma in our younger years, we have to wake up out of the trance of that default story, which gets activated in a disappointment or gets activated in a difficult situation. So a lot of us are activated into that deep core center of fear right now. And the story that we will default to that was born from trauma is alive and active. That's what's driving us to overeat on sugar or to just binge on alcohol or, you know, trying to soothe that or quiet that or calm that. The reason we're inviting you to allow the stillness to happen is to recognize that there is a part of you that actually knows that that's not the deeper truth, that you weren't born to be alone, that there's a part of you that is able to step outside of the story and begin to challenge the story, mentor yourself to more empowered meaning. And it's really the part of you that's like a good friend to somebody, or the part of you that can comfort a young child. So you want to think of it almost like the first thing you want to do is see if you can even name that feeling as an I am. I am alone. I am alone. See if you can name it. And then ask yourself, how old are you, sweetheart? How old are you? Ask that part of you that's feeling alone, how old are you? And immediately it's going to come up as a much younger part of you. So you want to access the part of you that if there was really a child, you had your own child or a niece or nephew or a grandchild, and that little child ran up into your lap crying and said, I'm so alone, no one will ever love me, I'll always be alone, and no one will ever show up for me. What would you say to that child that you love? From the wisest part of you, from the strongest part of you, from the most sane part of you. You know, it might look like something like, I'm right here with you, Angel. You're not alone. I love you. I've got you. I'm here. I love you. I've got you. You're right here. No, sweetheart, you weren't born to be alone. It's just what's happening right now. Is it your sister doesn't want to play with you, or your mom's misattuning to you, or your mom's not getting what you need? Here's the truth. You have a destiny to love and be loved. You came here with the gift of relatedness. You came here to give relatedness. You came here to become a master of love. It is your destiny. And you have the power right now to create healthier, connections with others, to create stronger connections. You know, there's that image that Ernest Hemingway came up with. There was some Ernest Hemingway quote about, you know, all life breaks all of us, but many of us are stronger in the broken places. Because, you know, it's like even nature, if you break a bone, what happens is when that bone fuses back together, it's stronger than it ever was. So life has broken some of us in early childhood so that we grow back stronger than anyone ever was in our family or our lineage, so that we can then have that experience as a healing for the lineage and we can pay it forward. We're the ones who can then help others to have that experience too. So we have to access the part of the self that's actually beyond the story and begin to use the stillness now to learn how to talk to that younger self and say, darling, that's not true at all. You can start with, I'm right here. You're safe with me. Mm. I'm right here. I want you, angel. Mm. I'm right here. I see you. You're not invisible to me. I see you.
Mm. I can really talk to this, Catherine, because, you know, I was in hospital as a baby. And I really did experience that I am alone. And it's taken me till I'm 61 to really get to the nub of that and to know that I can be triggered into that.
What triggers you into it?
Quite often. I mean, you know, I have a partner now and we are together, but there can be some things, I don't know. It's like a friend that I've been hoping to see doesn't come back to me on a phone call. You know, when I've asked her if she'll speak to me, or maybe the same thing with Ian, you know, he's going to ring me back and he forgets or something, or he gets in doing something and doesn't realize the late hour.
Tiny small things. Disappointments, right?
Tiny things.
And you know what? I find, Heather, we just collapse into that conversation inside of ourselves, outside of conscious awareness, as easily as a breath.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't care about me. She doesn't really value me, although we've been friends for 35 years, you know. Yeah. I'm not important to anybody, you know. I can go there. And I do the process and I calm myself and I show myself evidence of how my life is now and how the people around me are generally very loving towards me. And that is my world. It's not an isolated world anymore.
So you correct your consciousness.
I do.
You look for evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
And then you mentor yourself.
I do. Now, with kindness.
There's also the phenomenon of, but what if there is external evidence that other people don't want me? What if you're living with someone who's emotionally abusive?
That's
who doesn't show up for you or is very rejecting?
I've been there too, yes.
And I'll tell you the key. I mean, the punchline of that is the first place we go is a place of victimization. Here it is again. I'm powerless over this happening.
Mm, yeah, I just have to do as I'm told and manage things and live around the other person, try and keep them happy.
Right, life doesn't support me to have a different experience. You know, healthy love is for other people, not for me. This was my mother rejected me. Now, you know, my husband rejects me. Yeah. My kids reject me. Mm-hmm. So
the other piece I would like to say in that is that it's often not that conscious. You're putting words to it so beautifully, but it's often not that conscious. For me, during those times, it has just felt that is reality. That's what reality is in my life. That's what.
Yeah. We relate to it like it's true.
Yeah.
God made the mountains. God made the sun. God made me to be rejected and unwanted.
Because I cannot begin to imagine anything else because I've never had that experience.
Right.
Within that old identity, I had never had that experience.
Yeah.
And it's through doing this work that I've begun to have the ambition and imagination to have other experiences, and I'm now having them.
Yeah. Well, so here's the trick on that. We have to break up the victimization about it. And that's easier said than done. There's a little trick because a lot of times if you're in a situation like that, you feel unwanted. It's kind of a shame-based experience. So then if you go to look at how you might be creating that experience, duplicating the pain of your childhood in your present, that which we call in our community being the source of our own experience, where we'll often go is to shame-based questions. So we'll try and take stock of ourselves as, how am I the source of this, by going into some question that's some variation of what's wrong with me. Mm. And we'll go into some psychological wounding on damaged goods, or I never learned, or you know, it's somehow where we become then victimized again by our childhood and we're doomed to repeat this. So in our community, what we've been developing, and you're now part of our community, whoever's here listening. So in our community, what we're talking about is the self as source as an ability to really step back and objectively look at the ways you're giving your power away. Objectively look at the ways you are overgiving, people pleasing, disappearing yourself, you know, moving into trying to be smaller than you actually are, dismissing your own deeper knowing, all these kind of subtle ways, not speaking up because you don't have the courage to risk that someone might be mad at you. These kind of small ways that are literally creating a dynamic where you're almost, and this is a harsh way to say this, but I like to really get in there with the truth, because that's what the only thing, a truth shall set you free.
Absolutely.
Right? Where you're almost setting other people up to behave that way towards you, to validate that old story if you're not wanted. So we show up in these subtle ways that then really feed into getting more evidence for that story. So that's what we're looking at when we talk about if you're in a situation where an old story has the structure of other people mirroring that story back to you, it's challenging to change it because you've already trained people in a certain way. But change it you must. Change it you must. And it begins with this process we were demonstrating before. This is a lot of the work that Heather, you're doing so beautifully with people, where you're helping people to name the core consciousness and then learn how to correct that within themselves. And standing for a deeper truth, and then learning how to show up in that truth with other people. And it will require that we start to show up differently, being visible about our feelings and needs, even taking the time to identify what those feelings and needs are, learning to negotiate on our own behalf, learning to say no, tolerating disappointing other people, making requests, turning towards conflict in order to deepen understanding between us, and not just going along and pretending that you're low maintenance or that you don't have any needs or being always the one to give in and acquiesce. You know, it's going to require us to grow in order to have healthier dynamics. So I think that those of us who are in situations that are uncomfortable, you know, this is a time to start to do this process. I love, Heather, that you're still working with clients too.
Oh yeah, I love it. I love it. It's the best thing. I just love it. I love seeing people go through this process and really grow and change. They call themselves in first in calling in the one. Really see through this process, people become so much more powerful in themselves. They become the chooser rather than waiting around to be chosen. They become full of life, fulfill ambitions that they'd never let themselves even consider. You know, it's delightful to see.
That's beautiful. So when you're seeing people, are you finding that people are able to do a deeper level of work because of the stillness that's happening?
Absolutely. There's so much more reflection time.
I think it's also such a sobriety right now amongst us. Like, oh, we really do need to change.
Yeah.
Because the culture at large and how we've created the culture is a reflection of the inconsistencies within ourselves.
Indeed.
And the lack of integrity with our own calling and our own potentials. Mm. And we're looking at the lack of integrity of the world. We, you know, most of us have seen the TED talk that Bill Gates gave in 2015, predicting all of this was going to happen. And, you know, our governments around the world responded differently. Here in the United States of America, the current administration dismantled all of the safety nets should a pandemic happen.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. So the inconsistencies, the out of integrity, you know, and when I use the word integrity, I'm not using it from a moral standpoint. I think of integrity as being about, as Werner Erhard talked about it, just workability. What works in our lives? What works in our world? What creates a life where someone can actualize their potentials, no matter what they've been through in the past? So, you know, when we talk about declaring a future that's unpredictable and unprecedented, which is where we begin in calling in the one, what's the future you're going to stand for, rather than constantly sorting out why I'm as messed up as I am and why all my unhealthy patterns keep perpetuating themselves, which is an important conversation to have. But in calling in the one, we begin with the future. Well, what's the future you're standing for? Because the future is not determined by your past. The future is determined by who you're choosing to be in the present. And who you want to be being is somebody who's living into that future and defining yourself according to the future that you're standing for.
That's what I really love as well in this work, that we can really use visioning to imagine who we want to be and the life we want to be leading in the world we want to be living in. And right. That's what we use as our source of strength. You think you call it the North Star, guiding light. We live from there as if we are that person until we become that person.
Yes. So the visioning process that Michael Beckwith articulated that influenced me to create Calling in the One is to vision yourself in that future fulfilled. And of course, we add the senses. We say, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And you know, simple things like, oh, I feel the breeze on our face, or I feel our lips touching if you're doing Calling in the One. Mm. You know, or I see the big full moon that we're standing under as we're walking on the beach at night, and I hear the lapping of the waves and you know, on the shore. So, and I hear the crunch of the sand beneath our feet. So you get it really in your body. What does that future look like? What does it feel like? What does it sound like? What does it taste like? What does it smell like? And then you ask the critical question, and what would I need to let go of in order to manifest this future? And what would I need to begin to cultivate and grow within myself in order to prepare for this future? What are my next steps to become who I would need to be to fulfill upon this future? So we're doing that on a personal level for all of our personal dreams, and we're defining ourselves and who we know ourselves to be according to the future that we're standing for. We're holding ourselves accountable for living into that future. We're measuring all of our choices and all of our actions according to that future. And the opportunity that we all have right now is, of course, to bring that technology of manifestation and stepping into ourselves as a generator of the future into generating our world.
Yeah.
What does this world look like? Mm. What does it feel like? What does it sound like? What does it taste like? Who am I in that future? What is my role to play? How am I showing up and walking through the world in that future? And what would I need to give up in order to become that person? What would I need to begin to cultivate and grow within myself? What needs to wake up in me that needs to come front and center? For some of us, it's stepping into our leadership.
Yes.
Stepping into the gifts that we have to give. Mm. Stepping into a reliance upon a force and field of life greater than us. Starting to cultivate a connection with the creative energies of life that are wanting to move in that direction. Trusting our intuitive knowing. Learning how to act upon our intuitive knowing, finding our voice. I mean, for me to become the leader that I am, and now I've had the opportunity, the privilege of teaching hundreds of thousands of people. But I remember, you know, I was in my 40s before I wrote a word ever. I didn't even know I could write. And I was sitting in a women's group, and we were talking about really stepping up and claiming the future of our big life. And I had the courage to say, I see myself writing a book. And in this vision, the thing that I had to give up was how shy I was. I was incredibly shy. And, you know, 5 years before that, I was leading a community project that had to do with music, a nonprofit that I'd created, helping people who had lost their homes and, you know, kind of climbing back into the center of society and using music and the arts to facilitate their well-being. And I had a partner in that. And I was so shy. I would whisper in his ear what needed to be said. The whole project was actually from my own soul. It was my project that I would tell him what to say. And he was an extrovert, so he loved being the center of attention. So he would tell everybody, you know, and everybody was like, he was the point person in the project because I was way too shy to speak. So I was sitting in that little group saying, oh, I have to give up shyness. Now, does that mean shyness disappeared? No way. The first 5 years of my visibility in the world, I was shaking in my boots. And every time I spoke to a group, and you know, sometimes at one point there was 20,000 people on one of the calls that we did because we were so visible in what we were creating with Calling in the One and all the teachings that sprang from that, that I would get off the phone like, mortified. Oh my gosh, I embarrassed myself. I don't know if I said the right thing. All the shyness was there. Mm. I kept having to put the vision before my shyness and sourcing myself from the commitment to the vision. Mm. And the vision is never big enough if it's just for us alone. I think this is where we get stuck. Sometimes we do our development work inside of just, I want to feel better.
It's not big enough. It won't pull
you
through.
It's not a big enough game. You won't actually change and become who you need to be. You have to be standing for something in the world. So the opportunity is for us to really claim a world of relatedness and care, deeper levels of care, where we have ways of really listening to each other and learning from our disagreements and coming to more consensus and being with and for each other. Being with and for each other, being with and for each other. Mm. And it's a world we don't know yet. Mm. We've had glimpses of it, but we do not know this world yet. You know, here in the United States, after 9/11, I had the privilege of speaking with someone once who went through, who lived down by the World Trade Center and by the Twin Towers. And what he was sharing is the week after they fell, he said, I felt like I was living in heaven on earth, because everybody stopped relating to each other as though they were objects in each other's world. You know, particularly if you live in the cities, you understand what that is. Someone's in my way, I'm trying to get to the tube, and someone's in my way. They're objects in my world. Mm-hmm. And suddenly everybody just was inside of the valuing of human life. Mm-hmm. And so if you had someone who was an elder and they were carrying a bag of groceries, somebody just walked up and took the bag and said, where are we going? Mm-hmm. Let me walk you home. So there was this awareness, this sweetness in the field between people that everyone was inside of.
Yes.
This kind of precious valuing of each other and this deep automatic sense of relatedness. He said it was the most holy and sacred experience. Mm. See, I think that there's, and I've been in this question when I listen to him speak about that. I know that other teachers, Patricia Albert has devoted her life to this inquiry, have really been inside of this question, like how could we begin to generate that world without a nuclear holocaust? How could we begin to generate that world? So this question of can we all get on board with the need to generate that world? Or could enough of us begin to get on board so that we begin to generate that experience in our communities and in our world enough that other people start to, yeah, this feels good. I like this. Let me hop on the train here.
Yeah.
And begin to live that way.
Yeah.
Live into that future.
Yeah. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. So that's where we need to be with the imaginative bit. Yeah. Yeah. I want to make sure, Catherine, that we name this program that you're developing now and delivering now, that you've been describing so eloquently, because I don't want people to go away without knowing where they can find this beautiful new technology. So I wonder if you'd just like to explain about it a bit more.
Well, True Love Awakening is this process of transformation where we begin with the future and we ask ourselves the question, who would I need to be to manifest that future? And it's connecting with what's called the possible self. That's not my language. That's the language of two psychologists who created that beautiful term in the 1980s, Hazel Marcus and Paula Nerias. So the possible self and feeling into that self and beginning to hold ourselves accountable to becoming the self we would need to be in order to fulfill upon the future. And then what we do is we look at that area. So obviously we're doing that in love a lot, but people use this in finances or in family relations or in being a leader in the world. And you feel into that self, you say, well, what's been my pattern in this area that's been so frustrating where I haven't been able to manifest that future? And what we're going to notice is that in any area where we've had a hard time manifesting, that we actually have a hard time manifesting in that area because we have a self that's overly identified with the wounds of the past, what we might call a traumatized self. Mm. So we were deeply neglected in love. You know, it wasn't safe to be seen in our childhood. Or we grew up in, you know, poverty and rich people were hated. And so we got the message that, you know, we are poor and we are superior because we're poor. We belong to each other because we're poor. So you start to notice that there's a sense of self in the way that the pattern has been going. Mm-hmm. And you do what we did before, you name yourself. Where is that in my body? Mm-hmm. You know, how is that living in my field, particularly when I get discouraged or disappointed? And we name it as an I am. And we help ourselves to wake up out of that story. What's really true about that? We access a different part of the self that's already part of that story. You know, there's always a part of us, even if it's a small part of us, that knows, well, I don't really deserve that. Or, you know, other people seem to manifest love even though they've been traumatized. Or there is a part of me that does know my worth. I tend to negotiate it well when I'm negotiating a contract at work, or I show up as a leader in my community, my spiritual community. So there's parts of the self that are holding resources. And we borrow, we look for that resourceful self, that wise self, that spiritual self, that soulful self. And we start to cultivate a connection with the part of us that's holding the old story. Sweetheart, it's not really true. Here's what really true. So the second step in the process is to name that story. The third step is to wake ourselves up out of the story.
Beautiful.
Enter ourselves to wholeness. The fourth and the fifth step has to do with being able to start to notice how we've been the source of the old story covertly. We ourselves, to step out of victimization, to say, wait a minute, you know, when I, you know, inside of the assumption that, you know, I'm alone and everyone always leaves me, when I disagree with somebody, I tend to self-abandon, leaving myself alone, and just kind of take the other person's perspective and start to people please, or, you know, disappear myself in that conversation so I avoid conflict, like the plague, because in my universe, it's the beginning of the end. That's the old way of being, because if you're avoiding conflict, and this is just one example of how we do this, there's hundreds of examples I could give, but if we're avoiding conflict in a relationship, basically what happens is that the relationship will become codependent, where there's really only one person there, and you become a shell of a person because you're self-abandoning so chronically to try and keep someone from leaving, and you never really bond the relationship in any true, meaningful way, right? You never really root the relationship down and bond it, because what studies will show that what actually solidifies a relationship is the willingness to engage conflict in a way that helps to deepen understanding. Mm-hmm. And that's what really solidifies love and creates healthy love.
Yeah.
So that's how we're the source of our experience in that case. And then the fifth step is, well, how would I need to be showing up? Well, I'd need to actually be turning towards conflict. I would need to be, you know, making my true feelings, needs, preferences, desires, perspectives, opinions visible and not disappearing them, even when they're different. I would need to risk someone being disappointed in me or someone being angry. Even I'd need to risk their disapproval, and maybe they'll even leave, to stay true to myself and to, you know, hope to cultivate an honest connection, a true connection with this person. And of course, the first thing that comes up for us in that is, but I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do that. I don't even know what I'm feeling because I'm so used to self-abandoning. I don't know how to engage conflict in a healthy way. So then you have to list how you're going to need to now grow in order to be able to show up as the self of that future who's having a healthy relationship. And then the final step has to do with making the choice to do that in key moments. Actually showing up in these new ways. So we really chunk it down, you know, and, you know, how do I actually become my most powerful self, my healthiest self, my happiest self? And that's that true love awakening process. And we do hold classes in that. We have classes in Calling in the One. We have a Calling in the One course coming up. We have a 5-month masterclass, mastering this true love awakening process in the areas that matter most. But the classes are cyclical and we're always teaching, and I have a lot of free classes too. So the way that people learn about those classes is when they do sign up for the Love Out Loud messages, which right now I'm sending out 3 times a week. So I have to change it from daily to messages, Love Out Loud messages. But when you sign up to put yourself on that list, you also will get notified of the free classes that we have available. And I'll let you know when the other things come up.
That's lovely. Thank you so much. I'm really glad that you made that really clear, the process just then, and also that you've let us know where we can find you. So if you give
me... CatherineWoodwardThomas.com.
There we go. And that's Catherine with a K.
Catherine with a K. K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. Woodward Thomas.
Oh, that's wonderful, Catherine. Thank you so much for your time and wonderful expertise and wisdom. and most of all for your heart and vision. Thank you
Heather,
very much.
A big hug to you and to everyone who's been here with us. And they're so fortunate to have you as a guide,
thank
a leader.
You.
You're such a skillful practitioner, and I just adore you. It's an honor coming on and being with everybody.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.